You're listening to another episode of the Young Investors Podcast, so sit back and relax as myself, Brandon, and my buddy Hamish discuss the latest in the world of finance and stock market investing. Now, a quick reminder before we get into the podcast is that nothing in this podcast should be taken on as personal financial advice. If you're ever unsure about your finances or investing and you need some help, make sure you reach out to a qualified financial advisor. But with all that said, let's get into another episode of the Young Investors Podcast. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back, Hamish.
Hello. We're
talking about the weather. How's the weather going down in Melbourne?
Yeah, why do we always start with the weather?
I feel like I don't know. It's just what we talk about.
It's just the easiest starting conversation starter. No, yeah, it's okay. It's not too bad. I'm disappointed that summer's...
We were just talking before about how it's been such a cold summer.
Yeah.
It's like, I really do feel ripped off.
Yep. I love hot weather.
I want summer to blow my head off, you know?
Yeah, I hate cold weather. It really affects my mood when it's cold.
Yeah.
I was so looking forward to a nice summer and it was okay, but nothing like what we normally get. Melbourne's
and
normally
there was
like
so much rain.
Yeah, we did. We had a little bit of rain, nothing crazy, but
okay.
But normally we have like multiple days of 40 plus and we haven't had a single one. So
yeah, I don't think it's been over 40 in Canberra either.
Right.
Which is pretty unheard of. Normally we get, a few days. But it's just been rain. That's the thing that's annoyed me. I mean, living in Australia, you really shouldn't complain if it's raining a lot. But it has been bucketing like a lot.
Right.
Probably like every second or third day has been raining, which is kind of sucked, but you know, is what it is.
Yeah.
But definitely, absolutely. If you live in Australia, you should not get annoyed if you get a lot of rain. You should be very thankful that you've got some rain.
Hey, you know something cool happened overnight last night.
Overnight, GameStop went up a lot.
Well, that did also happen. But more importantly to the world, the Young Investors Podcast YouTube channel hit 1,000 subscribers.
Oh, there you go. Woohoo! Yay!
You did it.
Clap, clap, clap. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I wonder if we can, not that we'd make very much money, but I wonder if we can monetize our channel yet. We'd have 12,000 hours, 4,000 hours of watch time, surely, because we do an hour podcast every week. I'm sure we probably do.
Yeah. How long have we had the YouTube channel up for the podcast? Well over a year, right?
Yeah. It's been over a year for sure. Yeah. Yeah. So
we'd have to,
I would imagine
that.
Yeah. So for those that don't know, you need to hit 1,000 subscribers and I think it's 4,000 hours of watch time.
Yeah.
For your channel to be monetized, become a YouTube partner. So there we go. That'd be good.
I wonder how long the wait is now. Because I remember when I got my channel monetized, it was quite a while.
It's probably like a wait list thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that I guess they just go through and manually check or off channels. I don't know. Because I remember it took about a month or 2 months to get YouTube partnered after I hit the
requirements. That's strange. Maybe they just do that on purpose. It's like, you've hit our requirements. Now, for us, we're going to just wait a couple more months before we start paying you.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Very strange.
What are we talking about on the podcast today? Let me guess, more news media bargaining code stuff.
Yeah, I was almost hoping that there wouldn't be something.
Yeah, just it's been dominating the news, hasn't it?
Yeah, but it is something kind of significant, so we do have to talk about it again. Yeah.
And we are talking about GameStop again. There's another thing that we've just talked about to death, but more news on GameStop. Qantas is hemorrhaging. And I got an interesting story. Oh, you're going to talk about Woolworths a little bit. I've got an interesting story about a company that's coming under fire under an incentive strategy, which I'm sure we'll get to. But let's talk about, let me guess, ShareSite.
Yes. How did you know? Today's
just
episode was sponsored by ShareSite. Have you heard of ShareSite before?
I think so. What do they do?
Yeah, so they're actually this application that you can use to track the performance of your stock portfolio.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really good for keeping track of your capital gains, dividends. If you have dividend reinvestment plans, it will do all of those calculations for you. Currency gains, if you're buying shares internationally or you hold foreign currencies. And then the main reason why I personally have been using it for the past 4 years is when it comes to tax time. Wow, you just reading my mind this morning. Because as you would know, ShareSite generates up to 10 different reports that can be used at tax time to easily work out things such as your capital gains, dividend income, and more. And at the moment, you can try ShareSite for free by heading over to ShareSite.com/young investors. That's site spelled S-I-G-H-T, ShareSite.com/young investors. And if you use that link, you can also get 4 months free when you sign up to a yearly subscription. So go check it out.
Nice. Very good. Very good. Yeah, I had no idea. I've never heard of ShareSite, but I have to go check it out. No, but in all seriousness, it is a very good program and it is extremely helpful for exactly the reasons that you just outlined.
I'm planning to put together a video showing my 3-year portfolio performance for my portfolio over the past 3 years, obviously. And using ShareSite to do that is
a
lifesaver.
So you know your currency, you know everything. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
So you actually get an accurate representation of your returns.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because you could have like, I don't know, 100% gain in stocks or something, but you could also have a negative, what, maybe 17% currency or something like that.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And calculating the compounded return when you've bought at different times and different time intervals is pretty hard.
Yeah, it's
very
hard.
Challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I would not want to do that myself. Oh, dear. What should we talk about first? I'll talk about GameStop first because it's kind of like a non-story. It's like a story non-story, but it still took me by surprise. I thought we were done and dusted with GameStop. I thought that was it, you know? It had its amazing run. It became a meme. The whole world wanted to buy GameStop shares. The short squeeze was a success. Everybody, all the retail investors won, all the hedge funds lost, and the stock price went up a 1,000,000%. And then, of course, the company's not actually worth whatever it was, $15 billion per share. So it comes crashing back down.
$15 billion per share. Wow.
Yeah. $15 billion per share. That's how effective the short squeeze was. No, I think it got to like, it was $3.50 a share or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, comes crashing back down and we're all like, oh yeah, well, what goes up must come down, especially when there's no change in the underlying business. So thought it was done and dusted. And then out of nowhere, it was the last hour of trading yesterday night and the stock doubled. Just boom, out of nowhere. It says here, this is the article, GameStop's share price has made a stunning comeback, more than doubling in the final hour as investors piled into the struggling brick-and-mortar video game retailer. Shares in GameStop were halted less than 30 minutes remaining in the US trading session after skyrocketing 104%. Now up to $91.71.
Wow.
And that's not it. After hours, it's up another 54%. In fact, I might just check that because it might have even moved since I wrote that number. Now, 83% after hours, plus 83%.
So it's doubled in the last hour of trading, and now it's almost doubled again on top of that?
In after hours.
Wow.
This will be very interesting because, of course, it's Thursday right now when we're recording. So I'd encourage you guys to go and have a look at what the share price of GameStop is because right now, sitting here it's after its 100% rise, it's at $91.71. So likely tomorrow that's going to go up a bunch and that will be Friday and then Saturday morning will be another trading day. So yeah, see what happens. We might literally be seeing short squeeze part two going on right now.
Wait a second. In after hours, it's at $172 per share.
Yeah, I know.
Oh my goodness. So that, wow. So it's gone up 4x in the space of a few hours.
Yeah. I don't understand. I mean, this is surely another targeted effort by someone. I don't know who, but this has got to be another targeted effort.
Yeah, that's really, really rapid. That's
I remember when the stock price went up heaps and the shorts were getting burnt, the actual short interest didn't go down that much.
Right.
Yeah, it was really surprising. So whether shorts were getting burnt and leaving for new shorts to come in and take a short position, but the short interest, I think, only went down just under 100% of outstanding shares. Right. So I would imagine, and to be honest, perfectly honest, I haven't checked what the short position is in like the last week or so, but I would imagine it's still probably quite shorted unless some of the shorts just closed.
Yeah. Maybe someone, so a couple of big people who are shorter just trying to close their positions after the stock had come off quite a significant amount.
I mean, who knows? Yeah, who knows? But I mean, is this just going to, is GameStop going to be a stock that trades between $50 and $350 on a regular basis?
I can't.
This is a swing trader's dream.
I'm surprised it didn't go back down to $10 per share already. I expected it just to completely collapse. I mean, it did.
Absolutely.
I mean, obviously, from its 350 peak, it had collapsed significantly. But if you, I think we spoke about this last week. If you had bought just a year ago, you were still up massively.
800 or almost 900%.
An insane amount. So, it's very interesting. Very interesting to see what's going to happen. It's just bouncing around all over the place. I wonder if that's annoying for the management team. Like something to, like, is that,
I don't know.
Do you reckon like that's something they have to talk about like at meetings and stuff?
Maybe. I'm sure they wouldn't really mind all that much. I mean, if my company got caught up as a meme and it drove my stock price up to $347 per share from $20 per share, you know, I don't think I'd be, I might discuss it, but I don't think I'd be complaining.
Yeah, I guess so.
The interesting questions that I would ask would be, I'd discuss it with the management team. You know, do we try and raise money? Will there even be investors that would be willing to buy? You know,
True.
Do we sell? You know, do we sell our stock? I mean, because CEOs hold a hell of a lot of stock.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be hard not, if you know that your company is really worth like $20 a share, and this meme short squeeze situation has sent it up to 350. That would be hard for me not to sell at least some of my stock.
Yeah, it's so weird. It would impact their compensation as well if they're getting stock in stock as compensation.
Yeah.
It would be very strange.
So many things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? I'm sure there's a lot of implications. We've already labeled a few of them, but I'm sure there are plenty more.
Yeah.
But there you go. GameStop, hey, it just keeps grabbing headlines. But in all honesty, there's not too much that's to talk about here. I mean, it's just whether or not it might be another short squeeze. Short squeeze part two. And for that, we'd just be speculating. We're just going to have to see what happens with it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Whether the share price keeps going up or keeps going down. Let's play a game. By the time we record our podcast next week, what is the stock price of GameStop going to be? What do you guess?
What's it at now? 170 or something? I'm going to guess it's going to go back into where it was. So about 45, I think it was at before the start of today.
I'll guess it'll be at $60. So right. 45 and 60. We'll check up next week and see. I mean, we've got no reason to, like, that's a complete stab in the dark, but you know, still fun. What should we talk about next? Let's get this news media bargaining code. Yeah. Welcome back to the News Media Bargaining Code podcast. We are your hosts, Brandon and Hamish, and today we're going to talk about Australian news media and Facebook and Google.
I'm going to keep this really short because I know are sick of this. So I'm looking at the timer here on our audio recording, and I'll give myself 5 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes.
5 minutes.
At the most.
Okay.
If I go over 10 minutes, then something's wrong, but...
All right.
It's not much of a, it's not really a long story. It's just something significant that happened, but just very quick summary to reiterate what's happening. So the Australian government has basically started to introduce some new legislation that would force Google and Facebook to pay news media companies for articles on their sites. And that's like kind of the core of the legislation, but there are other things as well, such as having to notify the media companies of changes to their algorithm and explain to them how the algorithm ranks news articles and other links on their sites and that sort of thing. So last week we spoke about how Google had first threatened to remove search from Australia, but then since then they have actually decided to strike deals with some media companies. So they have deals with Seven West, News Corp, we spoke about last week, and a new one this week is The Guardian, which is a smaller media company, but they've also striked a deal with them. to basically pay them to have their news articles in their news apps. Right. And then last week we spoke about how Facebook had decided, no, we're not going to strike deals. We're actually just going to remove news entirely from our platform. Yep. And see how you like that. Basically calling the bluff, which was that Facebook wouldn't be able to do that. They just did it. And everyone was not very happy about it. Surprise, surprise. But this week, the Australian government has made a deal with Facebook, and they're actually going to change their legislation so that Facebook will bring back news onto their site. So basically, the major change is that if Facebook strikes deals with some major news outlets in the same way that Google has, they will not be subject to the new code. So that's the major change that's happened. So Facebook didn't want to be subject to this new media code. And there's a couple of things in the code that would probably be the primary reasons they don't want to be included in it. One is that they won't have to be subject to changes of the algorithm, which was basically just an unworkable part of the code because these businesses make changes to the algorithm all the time. So I think they had to provide 14 days notice for changes, which meant there was like basically a cap on how many changes they could do. Whereas I think Google normally does like 3,000 changes a year. So that just wouldn't be possible. And the other thing is that they also wouldn't be forced into mandatory arbitration with other media outlets. So basically if they're not subject to the legislation and they don't strike deals with media outlets, then if they were in the legislation, they would be forced to negotiate, and then the arbiter would just basically tell Facebook how much to pay. And that's no longer going to be the case. So Facebook has their kind of their voluntary choice to make deals with news outlets.
Right. So you reckon Facebook will now go around as Google did and strike deals with these news companies?
Yeah, I mean, it seems that way. It seems like they're probably going to get similar deals. And I don't have any specific numbers, but apparently the deals that Google has been striking have been, you know, low tens of millions of dollars, which is a fraction of what News Corp initially wanted to get. I think News Corp wanted $1 billion or something. And they ended up getting, it was like $20 or $30 million. In that deal. So maybe Facebook has seen, okay, this is our chance. We can just pay this nominal amount that, you know, it's first they might have thought it's going to be $1 billion. We're definitely not paying that. But now that they maybe realize that they can pay a smaller amount, it's worth it for them to just do that and then try and, well, now they're not going to be a part of the code, which means they don't have to they don't have to let the media companies know of algorithm changes, which is a big win.
So who will be left in this code?
Yeah, so I don't know if this means Google's still in the code. That's the part I don't understand, is whether Google is still in the code. So whether Facebook's actually gotten a better deal here because they held a bit stronger. But it's pretty funny, I think, because it was so quick that the government backpedaled on this. I spoke about it last week, how when Google threatened to leave, Scott Morrison was like, yeah, leave. Yeah, we would love that. We would love for new competition to come in. And then Facebook does exactly that. And they just scramble to make sure that doesn't happen.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty funny. But that's pretty much the that story.
Yeah, that is pretty funny. Yeah, gosh. We've spoken so much about it that we probably don't even have to say much more than that.
No, I don't think so.
And you did keep to your 5 minutes. Well done. Oh, that was basically
that actually
bang
was
on
5 bang
minutes.
On 5 minutes.
So well done. I don't even know what else to add to this. We'll just have to.
It's pretty much done. We'll see if the legislation comes through and what impact it has at some point. But unless there's some significant changes, we probably won't talk about this again.
Yeah. To be honest, I just find it funny just watching the Australian government trying to puff out their chests backed by, you know, news lobbying, and then Facebook and Google just being like, sit down. That's the funniest thing. It's just like, yeah, like ScoMo say, oh, yeah, off you go. We don't care. And then like a week later, oh, it's so unfair. Facebook did this. Oh, my God. Facebook's like, exactly. Sit down. Sit down. Anyway. Flex some muscle. Why not? Yeah. God damn. What a stupid law. Yeah. Anyway, we've said our piece. Go listen to the last couple podcasts.
Yeah. The last eight podcasts.
The last year of podcasts. It feels like we've been covering this forever. All right. Where should we move to next? Mm. What should we talk about? Stock market.
Yes.
Stock market's going down. How crazy is this? It's like everybody, I wouldn't even say the stock market is going down. I think it was like down a couple percent. And there's just everything you see. I think it's just because the stock market isn't going up. People are like, what?
What? It hasn't gone up 10% this week?
I thought stocks only go up. Like, what? It goes down? It goes down. What? Anyway, yeah. what's been going on in this funny old thing we called the stonk market?
Yeah, well, I mean, this was true at the time that I wrote this, but it's kind of not really true now that we're recording this today. The market actually was up. The US market was up significantly last night, I think over 1%. But basically, 2 weeks ago, the US market reached a kind of peak. And then since then, it had kind of trended downward, not even significantly. I think it was down about 2%. But it was kind of a change in direction from the just dramatic upward increase that we've seen since the mid March or so.
Right.
Overall, there is kind of a little bit of an interesting story to look at here. And this is kind of what a lot of people are talking about. Overall, the amount was pretty small. So the overall decrease was small. But if you look at different industries, then there was more dramatic moves. So what we've seen is that over the past couple of weeks, there's been a rotation out of air quote pandemic stocks into cyclical stocks. So businesses that benefited from the pandemic, such as the big tech companies, defensive stocks, such as food companies and grocers and that sort of thing, all those businesses that kind of saw an increase in their revenues during the pandemic, those stocks are being down significantly. While the businesses that were hurt most by the pandemic have been going up during this sort of market decline. Okay. So businesses like travel, like airlines, hotels, entertainment businesses, and a lot of manufacturing businesses that were affected during the pandemic, a lot of them are actually seeing increases in their stock prices. So while overall it's down a little bit, and I think now it's probably about even over the past 2 weeks because we saw an increase. Even though that's the case, there have been significant pockets of the market that are down quite a lot, between 5% and 15%, and parts of the market that are up significantly between 5% and 15% over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I've been watching so many people on, especially YouTube, just like, of course, they try and jump on any sort of thing that could be a clickbait headline that's possible. So everyone's like making, oh my gosh, the stock market is going down. Like, whatever shall we do? Is this a buying opportunity and blah, blah, blah. And I think the thing to remember is you just look at those underlying market metrics like Shiller PEs and Wilshire GDPs. I mean, I actually looked at them this morning. The Shiller PE sits at 35.75, which is pretty insane. Yeah. So that's what the cyclically adjusted PE ratio. Mm. So it's like the average of the last 10 years of earnings of these S&P 500 companies compared to the current price.
Yeah.
Historically, it's at like 16, 17. Mm. That's the average. It's only been over 35 like twice in history before now. I think it was like 1929, 1999. But stock market's hot. It's hot.
Yeah, and you can't even blame that measure on poor earnings in the last year because it's an average of earnings over a 10-year period. So
exactly.
Last year's earnings only counts 10% to the earnings figure they're using there. So it's still including, it's still benefiting mostly from like 9 years of consistently growing profits. And it's still at a ridiculous PE. And the same thing is true specifically for tech businesses. There was an article from the Sydney Morning Herald that I was reading, and this is a quote from it. The big tech companies, which trade on an aggregate price to earnings ratio of nearly 60 times, this is the FANG stocks, including Tesla as well, are extremely sensitive to interest rate movements because they are priced for continuous big increases in their future cash flows and earnings. I think that is a really, really good explanation of what's likely happening here. I think yesterday the Fed spoke and decided whether they were going to increase or decrease rates. So that could have been leading people to move out of tech businesses, because if there is any fraction of an increase in interest rates, that's going to hurt big tech companies and 60 times earnings. And remember, even though that price to earnings figure is based on last year's earnings, the big tech companies have had, for the most part, record earnings in 2020. So you're talking about businesses that have, a lot of them that have benefited from the pandemic, seen record earnings, and they're still priced 60 times.
Yeah.
It's extremely sensitive.
That is crazy. People are expecting so much.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just priced as if the next 10 years are going to be like the best 10 years we've ever seen in the stock market.
Yeah.
And I mean, you look at the economic factors and you're like, geez, I don't know.
Yeah. Just to, this is just off the top of my head. It wouldn't be 100% accurate, but in the year 2000, I believe Microsoft's price to earnings ratio was about 55 before it collapsed by 90% with the rest of the tech bubble. So a lot of the tech bubble was just garbage companies that shouldn't have even been there. But also a part of the tech bubble was real businesses that were great businesses that were just significantly overvalued, and that had to come off. And then Microsoft's share price was negative for 14 years. So
that's insane.
The current big tech companies are on average there. Some of them are insanely higher than 60 times earnings.
Oh, absolutely.
Comes to mind. I think Tesla's still over 1,000 times earnings.
Over 1,000,
which is just ridiculous.
It's just it's very risky looking at these sort of companies now, because the way that they're priced is that there's only, to justify that price, there's only one story that you can hear, and that's for the next 10 years, they have absolutely impeccable, unbelievable execution. Like, they just do not stop posting record result after record result. If there's any bumps along the way, then all of a sudden their share price really should drop, because investors are just pricing it so high. They're basically pricing it that next year and the year after and the year after and the year after and the year after, for like 10 years, you know, they'll show up and they'll post, you know, 40, 50% annual growth or something like that. And it just won't stop. That's why it's always so risky with these high PE companies, because the investors are already expecting, they're not buying the stock fairly valued for where they are now. They are already expecting in the next 10 years or something that they're going to do extremely well.
Mm.
So it's like, what's more likely? Is it more likely that they are going to do extremely well, they're going to do even better than extremely well, or is it likely that they're going to not quite do as extremely well as what people are expecting? When I look at it, it's like, well, obviously the probabilities are is that if anything comes along, then they're probably going to they're not going to impress people as they're expecting. So I think it's more likely that you see things cool off like that. But it's just bizarre.
Yeah. I've said this a few times in a couple of videos, and I'm going to say it again here, because I think it's really a really important concept to understand. And I think a lot of people miss this. Is Microsoft's stock dropped 90% in during the dot-com recession, but it's their earnings never went down. Their revenues never went down. In fact, their revenues and earnings didn't decline ever during 2000 and 2015.
Wow.
So the business grew in every single year, but its stock price was negative. So it's not just the case that, for Tesla's stock price to drop significantly, they would have to see a decline in earnings. Right. And then a recovery, like something actual bad would have to happen. Nothing bad to the business needs to happen. They could continue to go on to be the largest auto manufacturer in the world, and the share price still could come off significantly. Yeah. I think that's just important to understand. That
could just be like a market wide thing. It could just be like just a stock market crash out of nowhere, and that everything just gets tangled up in it.
Yeah, exactly. So
could be a flash crash. Nothing causes it, just happens. Yeah.
Yeah. So, very interesting.
Bonkers.
It really irritates me when I see people posting videos around this time being like, oh, buying opportunity. It's like, what are you talking about? Stock prices were lower a month ago and you weren't saying it was a buying opportunity.
Stupid. Yeah. You're stupid.
And I mean, if we're being honest, I don't think the people making the videos actually believe it either. They just know that it's a good time to make a video to like drum up some fear or some excitement or something like that. Because it gets clicks, which is
I'm going to draw you and I'm going to draw you in. You're going to click on my video. I could see it. If I put this thumbnail, buying opportunity, ? You're going to click on it and I'm going to make money. So I'm going to tell you to buy, even though it's a dumb idea. Oh, God. Don't get me started on YouTube. Far out. We're trying to bring back some respectability to the stock market space, but geez, it's hard sometimes.
No, it's just getting further and further out of reach.
It's just getting further. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just getting worse and worse. But you just got to be vigilant and follow the channels that are obviously not BSNU.
Yeah. Pretty much.
But anyway, whole nother topic that we really shouldn't get into.
Yeah.
You want to talk about Qantas?
Yes. Yeah. Let's do what's happening with Qantas at the moment. Do they report their earnings? Is that what happened?
Yeah, they reported half year. Which is weird, considering it's February, but you know, first half of 2021. Oh no, that makes sense. Yeah, of course. Yeah. February earnings. Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. Cause it's just delayed from the quarter.
It is quite a bit late though. It's like 2 months after the end of the quarter, but yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, but it makes, I mean, we only had earnings, what, a couple, I guess it was like a couple of weeks back, a month ago now or something. But anyway, so they report, first half 2021. And surprise, surprise, the earnings were not good.
Really? What?
not good at all. I'll just read what the article wrote. It says here, Qantas has revealed a staggering $1 billion loss amid the ongoing COVID-19 global pandemic, which has decimated the global aviation industry. In a half-yearly trading update posted on Thursday, came out this morning, the nation's largest airline revealed $1.08 billion six-month loss. The airline said the results were a result of ongoing international border closures, as well as strict domestic travel restrictions and state lockdowns. The CEO of Qantas, Alan Joyce, said these figures are stark but not surprising. During the half, we saw the second wave in Victoria and the strictest domestic travel restrictions since the pandemic began. Virtually all of our international flying and 70% of domestic flying stopped, and with it went 3/4 of our revenue. Mr. Joyce said the airline's domestic flying operations across Qantas, QantasLink, and Jetstar generated positive underlying cash flow despite a circa 70% decline in both revenue and capacity. This is interesting because I feel like we've covered Qantas and they were saying things like, we're up to 70 or 80% of our pre-COVID domestic travel. Do you remember how we were talking about stuff like that?
Yeah, we were. Yeah.
So maybe they were just absolutely cherry picking the perfect week or something.
Yeah. Well, I actually noticed this with corporate travel management as well, because it must have been after their full year earnings. So maybe in September or August or September, they were saying the same thing as Qantas. Saying, look, our capacity has just consistently risen from March, when of course it was the worst, I'm pretty sure corporate travel was at about 70% as well for corporate travel. And then they reported their half yearly earnings and it was down significantly again. I think it was back to 45% capacity or something like that.
That's weird.
And they blamed it on the second set of lockdowns that Victoria went through. But yeah, I would. Right. It is very strange because
We definitely were reporting that. We were definitely there was definitely news articles coming out saying, our domestic travel has picked up nearly back to pre-COVID levels.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe that was for a very short period of time, and then maybe second wave or, Victoria lockdown happened, or, Queensland or New South Wales or something like that.
Yeah. It is interesting watching it because at the time you just think, look, it's a nice straight line up. Of course, it's just going to trend from 70% up to 100% again and we'll be all back to normal. And that's, of course, not what happened. So I guess it's just a nice example of how you really don't know what's going to happen when something crazy like this is going on. Anything can happen quickly that just changes the circumstances.
The crazy thing with this is if you just look at the risk to their business, it literally only takes one or two people to get COVID in the community and their whole business collapses. Cops a massive whack.
Yeah.
It's it only takes one case of COVID to go out in the community in Victoria for, you know, state borders to be closed and everybody's back in lockdown. No, we got to make sure it doesn't spread. And that, and then it's just like just one person out of millions of people that live in Australia. And that can literally force, you know, these airlines onto their knees so that they just can't fly between different cities. So it's pretty, that is a big risk.
Yeah. If you're investing in these companies, you have to be projecting or assuming the worst, that for the next, at least the next 12 months, they're going to be continuing to lose $1 billion every 6 months. Yeah. Like, you would have to assume that, even though it might be unlikely that that's as bad as it is. As you said, it's just so fragile, and they're already significantly hurt from just their international travel, leisure travel being restricted. Like, they're not doing any international leisure travel, right? I don't think. Oh, very limited, I guess. There would be some flights, but it's a very fragile industry at the moment. I hope they have lots of cash around.
How funny. I hope they do too, but they don't. hope they raise a lot of money.
Had a little bit more than Virgin, at least.
Yeah, exactly right. So what did I write down here? That's right. I wanted to compare. This is what they were comparing in their report. First half 21 versus first half 2020. There's a few different parts to Qantas's business. There's domestic, then there's international, then there's Jetstar, and then there's their loyalty program. So if we start at Qantas domestic, first half 2021 was just over $1 billion in revenue. And then first half 2020 was $3.2 billion. So massive chunk out of domestic. International, first half 21 was at $722 million. First half 2020 was $3.8 billion. So obviously they're really copping it with international travel, because obviously we just can't go overseas. And that international travel is including freight as well. So I actually think that freight is kind of holding them up there. Like, that's it's lifting them up, because if it was just passenger international travel, then that would be screwed.
Yeah, that would be stuffed.
but the fact that they can still take freight overseas is handy.
That you go on, and then I'll.
Oh, I was just going to keep going on to Jetstar. Yeah, go on. So Jetstar first half 21 was $384 million. First half 2020 was $2.1 billion. So another massive chunk down.
Wow.
And then Qantas loyalty, first half 21 was $438 million. And 2020 was $872 million. So,
wow. Crazy. So
there you go.
Yeah. So what was their overall revenue approximately for the half?
Oh,
let's go.
Question.
1 billion, 1.7, 2. So maybe like 2.5.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's anything like other factors impact on their revenue, but that's their four main chunks.
Right, okay. Wow.
Yeah.
So, wow, that's just crazy, because if that is their revenue, $2.5 billion, and they took a $1 billion loss.
Yeah.
That's a big loss. I wonder what percentage drop in their revenue causes them to go just into a small loss or to like break even? Because with these capital intensive businesses, usually it's not much. Usually if there's a 20% drop, a 30% drop in revenue, they're not making money anymore. Like, they really need to be operating at a big scale in order for them to be profitable. And I mean, they've had a big drop in their revenue, obviously, but $1 billion loss. That is significant.
I'm trying to find the total numbers, but geez, they're hiding it well.
That I want you to know.
Yeah, it's so true though. It's so true.
That annoys me.
I don't understand. Like, there must be different standards to presenting your data in Australia versus the US, because in the US it's just so easy.
Yeah.
But in Australia, they can really run you around.
Yeah, nothing annoys me more when I know a number is in the report, but I just can't find it. Like, it's just buried. And then you find it like 10 minutes later. And it's like, why did that take so long? It should just be there with all the other numbers.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just searching revenue here.
Yeah, I'm just trying to.
And it really just doesn't want to tell it.
Yeah, I'm trying to have a look. Oh my God, the report's so long.
Total group revenue was $2.3 billion. down approximately 7 billion or 75% compared with pre-COVID levels. That's what I'm reading.
Yeah, I just found that as well. Interesting.
So, pretty insane. So, does that line up, 2.3? Does that line up with what we're talking about?
Yeah, that was about my estimate.
About your estimate as well.
Yeah.
2.3. Yeah, so that's all. That's all of their revenue.
Right.
What we just discussed. So, there you go. Yeah. Down 75%. Cop that. Yeah, the point you made before about the ongoing costs is very valid. It doesn't take much before these companies start to bleed.
Mm. Yeah, they took on a bunch more debt as well. I'm just looking at their cash flow
they
statement.
Did.
Yeah, $830 million.
Yep.
In debt. So that's, I mean, that's basically, they had to pay down $400 million. So they took on an additional $400 million to cover some of those losses. Yeah.
Yeah. And their cash, it's now down into the $2 point something billion range, I think. It was like 3.7 or something
like that. Yes. 3.5 down to 2.6.
Right. Okay.
Mm.
Yeah. So I don't know. Hopefully the bleeding stops. Otherwise, they're going to have to keep. I mean, this is the same story of like Carnival Cruises and that.
Yeah.
The bleeding's continuing, so they just have to keep raising money, and the more money they have to raise, the more money they have to, the more money they have to pay back in the future.
Yep. The higher their interest expenses are on an ongoing basis, so the lower their profits are.
And the worse it looks for investors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, investors come after, you know?
Yeah.
You got to pay back your debts first. I mean, if the company went bankrupt, then investors come last, you know?
Yeah. And the other thing is it's like during the pandemic, it's like impossible to know how much debt they're going to end up with after all the, after the rubble has settled, right? And everything's like kind of calmed down. Nobody knows what the damage is going to be. So it's actually very difficult to invest in a company that has to constantly take on debt and sell more shares and do that sort of thing just to survive. It's very difficult to figure out what it's actually worth after everything kind of calms down.
Yeah.
Makes it very tricky.
It's a bit speculative. I wouldn't want to invest in that area.
Yeah.
Personally. But yeah, that's Qantas suffering. But we already knew that. Do you want to talk about Woolworths? What's going on at Woolworths?
Yeah, so Woolworths also reported their half yearly results. And I'll be honest, I don't really look at Woolworths or Wesfarmers that much. I started looking into them recently, just out of curiosity, but it's not really at the top of my priority list of businesses to look at. But there was some interesting things happening with Woolworths. So their revenue, of course, Woolworths is a grocery store in Australia for those who are outside of Australia. And they were one of the companies that actually benefited significantly from the pandemic.
Absolutely.
So revenue came in for the half year at $35.8 billion, which was up 11% year over year. So quite a considerable increase. They're typically going to be seeing 4 to 5% at best increases in revenue just because they're such a giant now and they kind of just see minor increases from increases in their products, the prices of their products. But earnings per share came in at 90.5 cents, which was up 16% year over year. So that's actually quite surprising for a lot of companies. Yeah. A lot of businesses saw an increase in revenue, but a decrease in profits because the cost of goods for a lot of businesses went up during the pandemic, even if they were selling more. But 16% increase in earnings is very good. And we can break down kind of where that profit growth came from. So mostly it was driven by Big W, which is a big surprise because Big W's been struggling for a long time.
It hasn't been good, has it?
No, they have been hurting a lot compared to Kmart. They've been getting smashed in sales. Big W's earnings before interest and tax was up 166% on the same half from last year. And
how the hell did they do that?
I mean, I guess people were just buying a lot of rubbish during the
a lot of junk from Big W. Yeah, fair enough.
People were bored. I'm sure. Yeah. I think Kmart benefited the same way. People were just bored and they're just buying stuff.
Yeah,
it was the only thing.
Fair enough.
It was the only thing we could do for like half the year.
Yeah, we're stuck at home and maybe we want to change how, you know, the interior of our home. Maybe we get some bits and bobs and containers and new cushions.
Pretty much. A
couple of books to keep us, you know, a couple of movies.
Yeah, but it was actually the first time they've recorded a profit since 2015.
Holy moly,
when I say they've been struggling a lot. So they've kind of got a little bit of life breathed back into them during the pandemic, but I presume they'll probably go back to being terrible afterwards.
I'm just imagining, like, I don't know, whoever manages Big W, like, standing up is like, look, it's been hard, but I really feel like this quarter's the quarter, guys. Come on, we can do it. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, right. We haven't posted a profit since 2015. It's like, no, I really feel this quarter we're going to do it. And they did do it.
They did. Amazing.
There you go. Good on you, Big W. One of my favorite stores. It gets the Young Investors podcast tick of approval. Do you go to Kmart or do you go to Big W?
I go to Kmart.
Yeah, I go to Kmart as well.
Sorry, Big W.
That's hilarious. I don't know even the last time I bought something from Big W. I couldn't even tell you what I bought or when I bought it.
Nah, me neither.
But I was in Kmart like last week.
Yeah, Kmart's great.
Yeah. Kmart also gets the Young Investors podcast tick of approval.
It's funny.
Anyway, what else is going with Woolies?
Yeah, so in terms of their profits in other segments, so Australian food, which is, of course, their major grocery segment, was up 13% year over year. So very good growth there from the core of their business. Liquor was up 24%, so no surprise there.
Stuck at home, let's get drunk.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much was
that's so bizarre doing. When the lockdown started and they were releasing statistics on Australian alcohol consumption, it was like going through the roof.
Yeah.
It was bizarre.
Yeah, I mean,
but there you go.
Yeah, I mean, is that a surprise to anybody? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what people do.
But what does Woolworths own in terms of liquor?
Yeah.
Do they own Dan Murphy's?
Yeah, they do. So they own Dan Murphy's.
They do. BWS?
They used to own BWS. I don't think they do anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think it's just Dan Murphy's at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
BWS owned by... maybe this is an old thing. It says that BWS is a brand of Woolworths Endeavour Drinks Group, which also includes Dan Murphy's, Cellar Masters and Pinnacle Liquor, but maybe that's changed. Might be a little bit old.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. I thought I heard that they got rid of BWS, but...
Yeah, potentially.
Maybe not. And then the last part of their business is their hotels business, which is they own a number of pubs and pokey machines and that sort of thing around Australia, which a lot of people don't know. Kind of interesting. Like a big part of their business is pokey machines.
Very
different to the fresh food people look that they try and present to the world. But so hotels was obviously hurt significantly. Their profits were down 45%. So that part of their business has been hurting. But
jeez, I didn't know that. That's like, did you know that Wes Farmers mined coal up until quite recently?
Yeah. They have
Do you know that?
And they have significant chemicals and fertilizer business. And
yeah, I couldn't believe that. When I first started looking into Wes Farmers, I was like, what the heck? But I think they've divested from that stuff now. But I think they were mining coal as recently as like 3, 4, 5 years ago.
So anyway. Yeah, that brings up
it.
I
was just going to say, there's some parts of these businesses where you're like, wait, what? They do that as well? Are you serious?
Yeah, I know. It is pretty strange. It brings up an interesting point because there was actually a lot of talk about investors who wanted Woolworths to get rid of all of their liquor and hotel businesses so that they could be included in the new like ethical ETFs and funds, because there's a lot of funds in Australia at the moment that are really pushing the, you know, no miners and you know, no coal or no fossil fuels, and no gambling, no cigarettes, no alcohol. So there was actually a lot of talk that they wanted Woolworths to ditch those businesses so they could get included in those areas. But so far, they haven't done that. But in probably the most interesting thing coming out of Woolworths is in terms of their online sales, which has obviously been a big a push recently for both Coles and Woolworths. Their online sales reached $1.8 billion and represented 7.7% of total sales. So that's kind of progressively increased over time. More and more people either getting groceries just delivered or doing click and collect, where they order online and then just go and pick it up in store. And the CEO actually said, and this is a quote, "It won't be long before digital sales surpass in-store sales." I don't know about that. Really? Do you reckon that's going to be the case? Do you reckon, do you reckon in the next 5 years there will be more grocery orders online than just going physically?
I can't imagine so.
I can't imagine it either. I would have to think.
Yeah, I can't imagine. So I feel like there will definitely be growth in online.
Definitely.
But I can't imagine it overtake. Like the amount of people you see going into the supermarket, I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, well, it's currently 7.7%. I mean,
is it?
Yeah, okay. So I could see it maybe going to like 30% in 5 years or something like that. But to go maybe, 51% or 50%, I don't know.
Yeah, I doubt
it. That would be big. They would have to get the cost of delivery down significantly. It's still kind of expensive.
Yeah. But I was just doing a bit of research in the background here, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Woolworths has chucked all of its alcohol businesses into a group which is called the Endeavor Group.
Yeah.
So, and I think that I could be wrong, but this article here is saying that they're looking to, to push it all into a single entity. I don't know if Woolworths then intends to pursue a separation of the business through a demerger. Right. However, I don't believe that has happened.
No, yet. It hasn't happened yet, but.
So the Endeavor Group holds Dan Murphy's, BWS, Cellar Masters, Langton's and ALH Group Hotels.
Yes. Right. Okay. So
there you go.
So they probably are planning on getting rid of it.
So maybe they're trying to do that demerger so that then Woolworths can slot into the ethical ETFs and blah, blah, blah. And then Endeavor can just be its own thing.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
Is that all we got to talk about for Woolworths?
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much all we had for out of Woolworths. I don't know what the stock did. Let's have a look. See what the stock did on the news. 2%.
2% up?
Yeah. So nothing crazy.
Mm. Yeah. Probably quite a big move for a company like Woolworths, 2%.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's just like if Facebook does that in a day, you're just like, typical.
8%? Oh, okay.
Yeah, 8% up, 8% down. Tesla's like 10% up, 10% down. Yeah, it's normal.
Crazy.
All right. Should we move into some Q&A and then we'll wrap things up?
Yeah, for sure.
We got a couple of Q&A questions. This is the first one comes in about 13F. So the question reads, "Hey guys, loving the podcast. Thank you very much. Quick question. What website do you use to find the 13F filings that are easy to understand and interpret? Cheers.
Cool.
Do you have a go-to 13F tracker or screener?"
Yeah, I think we have different ones. So this will be able to provide a couple of different ones.
Yeah.
But I use Whale Wisdom, like whale as in the fish or the... Right.
Or the whale.
I was trying to describe it, not the other...
Is it a whale's a mammal?
It is a mammal, isn't it? Yeah, you're right. I don't know. That's not my area of expertise.
Yeah, me neither. The
whale wisdom.
Aquatic life.
Yeah.
The aquatic creature.
Yeah. Oh, dear. No, but Investing with Tom showed me that one. Whale Wisdom. That's pretty good for looking at 13Fs. Do you have one that's different?
The one that I use for my videos is called Dataroma, and I use that one for the videos because it does have those really nice, easy to understand graphics. Mm. So I really like that one. But I've also been using a website called Tikr.com, Tikr.com, because it not only includes 13Fs, but it tries to grab other reporting. From other countries. Right. For example, like Michael Burry has investments in, Japan and whatever. So it tries to, or Ray Dalio, Warren Buffett even has investments in Japan. So it tries to gather not just the 13Fs, which talk about the American markets, but also it gathers as much information about international buyers that they have as well. Mm. So I found that one quite good, actually. That's quite handy because you actually don't realize, like, you just look at 13Fs and you're like, oh, the biggest position in their portfolio is this. But when you actually remember all, like, if you consider international positions as well, a lot of cases, it's like the second or third largest position in this investor's portfolio is actually some company over in South Korea or, China or something like that. So, yeah, quite interesting. But so I've been trying to use that one a little bit more. It's a little bit early days for that business because I think they're just building out their platform. But they're the ones that I use.
Yeah, it's 13Fs is one of those things you really don't want to do it manually. Like, it's just irritating because 13F just shows you the snapshot of their portfolio. So if you're looking at changes, it would just be a pain in the neck to compare.
Oh, it would be.
Oh, look, did their Tesla position move up? No. Did this position move up? No. Is this one included in the last quarter or is it a new position? Like, it would just be annoying. Yeah. Like, which one's missing from... So, using a website like Data... What is it? Data Roma?
Data Roma. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. All right. I'll ask you a question. Sure. Maybe we'll do this one.
Sure.
Hey guys, love the podcast. Thank you. I'm 65 episodes in. I started listening at the beginning of the month.
Holy.
My goodness. You're powering through this.
You started listening at the beginning of the month and you're 65 episodes in?
Wow.
That is, you are, well done, sir.
Props to you. Averaging two and a half a day.
Wow, you are the MVP, this month's MVP. Congratulations. Unbelievable. That is insane.
This month's MVP. Wow. Also, first month of the MVP.
Yeah. That's amazing. Anyway, sorry, to the question.
So the question is, just wondering if you keep your cash in your brokerage account while waiting for a company to come down to your margin of safety, or do you hold it in a high interest savings account to get a little bit of interest while waiting? Thanks.
Like a little bit of both, I guess. There's sometimes, I don't know if it's like this for all brokerage sites, but it takes a little bit of time for your money to get into your account. So like for me investing with Stake in America, it takes a few days for that money to get over there.
Mm.
So I keep most of my money, you know, just in my bank account, but I do have some cash in my brokerage account just in case there's something that goes down immediately and I want to take advantage of it immediately. I don't have to wait. I think like my CMC account's the same. If you put money into your CMC account, it'll take a couple of days. I don't actually know why that is. But yeah, I keep a little bit of money like in the actual brokerage account itself so that if I want to go, if I want to take advantage, then I can do that instantly.
Very good.
Because that caught me out a little bit actually last March when things were going down a lot. I actually got caught out. I was a little bit late to the party because I had to wait for that money to get over into my account.
Oh, interesting.
What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of ComSec International, it's same issue as what you're talking about. It takes, I think, a day or 2 days. I think 2 days to move money into US dollars. So I keep a little bit in US dollars just ready to go in case I need to make any US investments. On the ASX, ComSec is just, it's fairly instant. So
It just takes it out of your bank account, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. So you have like a brokerage account, but you don't have to put money in there for until 2 days after the trade. So, because there's that two day waiting period. So
settlement
day. Yeah. So you can just make the trade instantly and then slowly make the transfer whenever you get the time to do it. So, so to answer the question though, most of my cash is in a high interest savings account and I just kind of have a record of how much I've set aside for investing. But on top of that, there is a little bit that stays in a brokerage account just for the US dollars part.
There you go.
All right.
There you go. And that'll do us for today. As we always say, if you've got a question that you'd like us to answer for Q&A, make sure you head over to the YouTube version of the podcast and leave any questions, comments, discussion topics. Leave it in the most recent podcast episode. And as we say every week, we just grab them, chuck them in the Google Doc. And at the end of the podcast, obviously we run through them. That'll do us for today, guys. Jeez, I'm surprised that we got through a full hour because some of those news stories were such non-news stories. We end up rambling a little bit, but it's all good fun.
A few rants in there.
You're always going to get at least one rant from one of us each podcast episode. That's true. Thanks guys for listening. We do genuinely appreciate your support and thanks to ShareSite for sponsoring. And we'll see you guys in the next episode.
See you guys.